thewellnesscouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
You're listening to Wellness Women Radio with women's health experts, Dr. Ashley Bond, the pregnancy and birthing guru, and the queen of hormone imbalances, the period whisperer herself, Dr. Andrea Huddleston. They're raising the bar for women's health by bringing you the most up-to-date health and wellness information to live your best life. Now, onto the show.
This episode of Wellness Women Radio is very proudly brought to you by Dinner Twist. Dr. Ashley and I want to let you in on a little secret of how we maintain our healthy whole foods lifestyle with very little time. And one of those ways is actually with Dinner Twist. So they plan, they shop, they deliver everything to our door to take all of the guesswork out of having really healthy meals for dinner each night. I love Dinner Twist because they are a locally family-owned business here in Perth in Western Australia, and all of their produce is locally sourced and seasonal. So they are really invested in all of their suppliers as well, which is absolutely amazing. Everything is so fresh. Ashley and I both get the Wholesome Box, which is naturally gluten and dairy free as well, and is very consistent with a paleo type lifestyle as well. So it's, you know, completely consistent with, you know, the way that we want to eat and want to feed our loved ones too. This is also how I trick Dean into thinking that I can actually cook. So seriously, if I can do it, everybody can, trust me. And their recipes are so delicious. They also have other options apart from the Wholesome Box. So they have a family box for bigger size families, an express box if you're really short on time, as well as a vegan box too. Now, we would love to give you the opportunity for you to actually try Dinner Twist and realize how healthy, how delicious, and how fresh it is, but also how much easier this is going to make life as well. So we have a special promo code for you, and that is going to give you $35 off your first box. And that is WWR for Wellness Women Radio. So we would love you to try for yourself. Don't take my word for it, but let me know what you think. Without further ado, ladies, onto the show. Okay, everybody, thank you again for joining us and welcome back to Wellness Women Radio. I am Dr. Andrea Huddleston, and again, my beautiful co-host, Dr. Ashley Bond, is AWOL today. But don't worry, because I have an incredible guest with us today who I'm actually really excited to do a deep, nerdy dive with today, because I think Amy Ropp and I are going to have a lot in common. I'm excited to sort of unpack that. But before we get into that, guys, I want to say thank you so much to our beautiful listeners. We got some stats this week from one of our listeners, actually, that has let us know that our podcast is rated in the top 0.5% worldwide, which is just incredible. And, you know, it's because of you beautiful people. So thank you for your rates, your reviews, your shares with everybody. We are so, so grateful for that. And we love doing it. And we love connecting with people all over the world, like my guest, Amy from New York. I think you're actually our first New Yorker on the show, Amy. Really? So welcome.
Well, thank you. And you know, disclaimer, I don't live in New York anymore, but I'm going to be there tomorrow. I live in Connecticut now, but I still have a practice in Manhattan.
That's right. You can still claim it.
I still claim it. I lived there for 13 years. It's still my city.
So guys, I'd love to introduce Amy Ropp to you all. So she is a renowned women's health and fertility detective. She's a celebrity acupuncturist and coach, and the best-selling author of the books Chill Out and Get Healthy, Yes, You Can Get Pregnant, Body Belief, and The Egg Quality Diet, a clinically proven 100-day fertility diet to balance hormones, reduce inflammation, improve egg quality, and optimize your ability to get and stay pregnant. So, Amy, that is what I'm, you know, I think most excited to unpack with you today, you know, talking about things like egg quality, because it's so important and relevant. But before we get into that, I just want to know, what is a fertility detective?
No, I made that up myself.
I love it though.
Because I kind of think that's what I do, right? I mean, I have lots of clinical experience, right? I was in the clinic seeing 60 patients a week for about 15 years. And then kind of since really having my son, and then COVID, I've cut back in the clinic, but now my business is mainly online. So, I mean, literally thousands of clients, and prior to going to Chinese medicine school. I'm a medical school dropout, and I have a biology, a chemistry, a partial neuroscience degree. So anyway, I share that because I take all of that knowledge, which I think the bulk of the clinical experience is really where most of that comes from. And now I work, you know, these years I work hand in hand with fertility doctors, and I'm constantly in conversations with reproductive endocrinologists. And, you know, like I was just texting with one just before for about a patient. And so I like to see myself as a fertility doctor because I feel like I can look under all the layers, get under the rocks, and just try to figure out what the flip is going on as to why this woman isn't getting and or staying pregnant, or why her partner's sperm isn't improving, or things of that nature. But yeah, so it's, I guess a fertility detective is someone who looks at everything. And I think really I'm not quite looking at fertility. I'm really looking at the rest of the body and saying, why does the body not feel safe enough to procreate? Why does the body not feel like it has enough resources to do this? You know, what is the body trying to tell us, and then solve for that?
Oh, and I mean, I think that with so many women being, or so many couples being diagnosed with quote unquote unexplained infertility, I reckon that's where a fertility detective would really come in so handy and really shine, right? So how, Let's go back a few steps. Like, how did you get to this point, Amy? Was this because you just saw how completely stark the terrible fertility stats were in this almost dystopian world that we have at the moment? Or what created your passion for fertility?
You know, I didn't choose it. And when I came out of Chinese medicine school, I was, you know, I really wanted to just be a general practitioner. I didn't want to specialize. I was pretty clear on that. You know, I was highly specialized, if you will, in my graduate studies before going to Chinese medicine school, like really in neuroscience and Alzheimer's disease. And it was, I felt like it was too much of a microscopic viewpoint, you know, and I really wanted to be macro. But you know, the stats kind of led me here because mainly women seek alternative medicine, mainly women of reproductive years. And then it just kind of fell into place, you know, where I just started seeing women, either they were trying to get pregnant, having a difficult time, or they were having menstrual issues or other issues related to hormonal imbalance. And I do think that, you know, I can like look back like the younger version of myself, I think, and I still am this way. I'm not going to say I'm not, but not as much. It was very driven by, you know, the win, if you will, you know, and in a pregnancy is a very positive, you know, it's a very obvious end result. You're either getting there or you're not, you know, and I would always look at lab work, like I still do, but hormones are either shifting or they're not. So because I practice such a, I guess, esoteric or more subjective medicine, you know, Chinese medicine's hard. Like we're feeling the pulses, we're looking at the tongue, we're seeing things shift. But when I could see that actual data shift, it I think that hooked me.
Oh yeah, and I don't think, as practitioners, I actually don't think that there's anything more important than this, you know, than helping to support couples to have the family that they so desperately want. I don't know what's more. There's nothing that will change the trajectory of their life more than helping to, you know, facilitate that process. Like certainly, you know, women who maybe have endometriosis or horrific period pain and helping them to improve their quality of life helps them to get on with their purpose and everything else. You know, their health has that greater purpose, but I don't think that there's anything more important than this. So I totally understand you wanted to be a generalist, but then I guess just the needs of, And I know the fertility stats in the US are fairly similar to Australia and pretty much around the world at the moment. I think they're slightly worse than Australia, but, you know, marginally, and it's all heading in a pretty stark direction, to be honest.
1 in 6, I think we're at now, which is and majority of those are like what you said, my trigger word, I suppose, unexplained infertility, you know, it sends me. I remember, like, speaking of endometriosis, though, I remember, you know, this is 20 years ago. I've been, you know, in clinical practice for 20 years. So maybe it's 18 years ago, but I had a pretty stubborn endometriosis case. And she wasn't trying to conceive, but she suffered greatly. Mm-hmm. And so I took it on as my mission to really understand everything I could from the perspective from endometriosis, and of course Chinese medicine, Western medicine, you know, all the combining factors. But one of the things I came across in my research was, and this is again 18 to 20 years ago, 40% of women dealing with fertility challenges have endometriosis. It was something like 40%. Like, it was a significant number. And this is back when they still did LAP, kind of before they would rush women to IVF. And then they changed the standards. And now it's like, no, we don't need the LAP, because if you have endo, you just go right to IVF. And that so obviously does not understand the largeness of the systemic impacts of endometriosis. But I remember thinking when women would come to me and they weren't getting pregnant, I just kind of started treating everyone almost as if they had endo. Like, it was just this kind of like blanket approach. Obviously, I still, you know, individualized treatment, but just kind of under this assumption that there might be some kind of, you know, disease state like that lurking. And I feel like that really helped me in my success too, that I was kind of making this assumption. And in Chinese medicine, we would make an assumption of like, there's cold in the uterus, or there's stagnant blood, mm-hmm. or, you know, crappy blood, as my teacher would say. And so, you know, we're kind of always are looking at that and looking for the signs and the symptoms. Obviously, like cloudy periods that are darker in color are going to lead me to that too. But, and a lot of endo girls have that, but just this kind of, you know, understanding that there are these systemic disease states that are impacting fertility, and to not kind of try to break it down like the way Western medicine just breaks it down of like age, AMH, FSH, andro follicle count. I mean, that's kind of it, right? Maybe sperm, maybe not. Oh.
Which is crazy, because in Australia, the number one cause of infertility is actually now more statistically relevant on the male side. So it's crappy, you know, sperm quality and sperm count. So it's more male factor infertility. And whereas the lens is always put on and all the treatment is done to the woman, irrespective of where the problem lies, which is why I think that I'm so triggered by that blanket statement of unexplained infertility as well. In my opinion, it's lazy medicine, just because it's, you know, they've been told that it's unexplained.
Post on yesterday. That's what I called it. Lazy. It's lazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Amy, what do you think are the biggest contributing factors to our current state of fertility, and why people are struggling so much to get pregnant when this should be the most easy, this is the culmination of all of our years of evolution, and it should be the most fundamental thing that our body can do. Why do you think we're having such challenges?
I mean, I think it's multifactorial. I think it's so hard. And I think every time I say it's just one thing, people freak out. But I would say the one thing is environmental stressors, you know,
yes.
And whether that's just not slowing down and resting and recovering enough, not sleeping, not wearing our blue light glasses, not getting any actual sunlight, to chemicals and pesticides and everything we touch and everything we eat, to toxic relationships, to toxic work environments, right? You know, it's just this amount of stress on the body and not getting enough recovery. And, you know, like, right, we know how the nervous system works, right? It's like, when people are living in a state of fight or flight, it's just the body will not prioritize the rest and reproduce state. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I mean, you probably see it the same thing. I don't think it's that we have to turn off the fight or flight or minimize every single environmental stressor, but we've got to shift the scales back this way to the rest and reproduce.
Yeah. So essentially, it's all of those, any of those stresses, whether it's physical, chemical, or emotional. And it just means that we're living so far out of what would be balance for our bodies. And we're just, I think of fertility as being It's almost like the canary in the coal mine. It's the analogy for our overall health, just as a, you know, as a society, I guess. We're living so far away from what would be balance for our body. So let's try and
that leads to the micronutrient deficiencies, that leads to the microbiome being off, that leads to, you know, compromised blood flow, right? That it just hormonal imbalances at the core, right? It just, it's a very layered and I think, domino type of effect. And so it's not just one thing to fix, which is unfortunate. Everybody wants that one thing. You know, if I just go non-toxic with all my bath and beauty products, then it'll all work out. You know, if I cut soy out of my diet or whatever it is, you know, and I really think that, and this is probably, you know, wisdom and practicing for long enough. I really do think that there is the space for having these stressors in our life and still being fertile. It's literally though, taking it from where we're over here, you know, in the all far left, and we just kind of got to move it more to the middle versus, you know, completely abstain from every single thing in your life. And then and some people need, though, like some people do need that extreme measure, maybe for a short period of time. And then they can kind of learn what works for their body and what doesn't, and then come back to the middle a little bit. But it's a multifactorial process. And I mean, and when you look at the data, you know, I just read a post from a doctor that I shouldn't be following because she triggers me insanely, but I start to follow her sometimes for like, you know, for the, like the opposite effect. But she said something about like how high fructose corn syrup isn't a problem and like chemicals in the environment. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't actually handle the ignorance. Like, please read the data. It is so stinking clear. You know, we've introduced 100,000 chemicals into our environment. It's probably 120 now. I mean, that's getting old. That comes from 2016. But and since then, I mean, things have just skyrocketed. And I mean, it's just like, how can we not connect those dots? And who are we serving when we ignore data like that, or just blame it all on the woman's age, regardless if she's 35 or 45, you know, or 25. I mean, I just had a 33-year-old tell me her doctors are saying, diminished ovarian reserve, she's got a perfectly fine AMH. They have no reason to be saying that. Poor egg quality, you know, and I'm like, I can't make terms with it. It's hard.
And I'm right there with you. I find that so frustrating. And there's such, you know, even if we're being so quote unquote like evidence-based, there's such compelling, robust evidence showing that, you know, things like high fructose corn syrup or the really high GI foods are so damaging, even just from, you know, an inflammation perspective, but also that chemical exposure and how that's going to affect everything else. There's such compelling data on that. Amy, let's look at some things that we can control a little bit. And these are some of the things that you go into in the egg quality diet. And I love this idea of helping to improve egg quality, because when we, maybe a woman's told she has diminished ovarian reserve, so she doesn't necessarily have quantity, but that doesn't mean that she can't have quality. So what sort of things would be in a woman's control in terms of, you know, do's and don'ts when it comes to food and nutrition to improve, you know, for example, that, so egg quality?
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly it. You know, I don't care so much about AMH or reserve or those numbers, right? Because I mean, we do know too, and the evidence shows us women in menopause still have about 1,000 eggs left. So we're still dealing with, even if you're diminished ovarian reserve, we're still dealing with a pool of a couple thousand, maybe thousands left. And but we should focus on the quality, not the quantity, right? And so how do we optimize the quality? And I think we do that by improving nutrient absorption, by reducing inflammation, by regulating the immune system. So the egg quality diet is really something I've been using in clinical practice for probably a decade. And then a couple years ago, decided to publish it into a book. And it's basically an elimination diet. So we eliminate a lot of foods, and then we slowly reintroduce them. And in that process of elimination, we're giving the body a break, And we're allowing the body to start healing the gut, which is, we know, is tremendously important when it comes to hormonal balance and when it comes mm-hmm. to nutrient absorption and when it comes to inflammation. And some of it, most of it's kind of based in autoimmune paleo and a lot of that research. But then I, you know, had some Chinese medicine things in there. You know, Chinese medicine's been using bone broth forever. But the idea is to reduce as many assaults as possible and to kind of eat simply and clean protein, veggies, fat, and in a macronutrient balance that has also been shown to be supportive of fertility and hormones. And so it's somewhere around, you know, 25 to 30% protein, 40-ish percent fat, and the rest carbohydrates. But again, we're looking at carbohydrates from mainly vegetables. Some women need some grains in their diet. Some women do really well completely grain free. Mm-hmm. You know, we're cutting out the obvious, you know, assaults like gluten and dairy and soy and artificial sweeteners and pesticides. And then not so obvious ones like nightshades and lectin containing nuts and seeds and beans. But it's also really important to remember, because I think when people first hear that, they're like, oh my gosh, like this is hard enough. Now I can't eat any of these foods. And it's like, no. Well, this is a short period of time, you know, 30, 40 days, 50 days, which I think is a short period of time, but it's enough time for you to really identify, you know, and I do it based on like the symptom questionnaire in the book too, of like how many red flag symptoms are you dealing with? And some of them are fertility based. Most of them are not. Skin issues, headaches, brain fog, joint pain, you know, digestive issues. All sorts of things. And you get to see how your body starts to shift. And that, you know, and I know you practice similarly, that is then me seeing, or the body saying, I'm actually starting to get what I need. I'm actually healing from the inside out. And then we start playing around with reintroductions, right? It's what any functional medicine doctor was doing 10 years ago. Anytime you went to see them, everybody was put on elimination diet. There was no food allergy tests are like a snapshot in time. They're not going to tell you the bigger picture. I don't recommend them. I don't use them. I don't even pay them any attention when someone brings them to me. I will strictly just do an elimination diet. And that's, you know, I studied under lots of different doctors and got that information from them as well. But really clinical experience is kind of what led me here. And so when I think of the egg quality diet, and then diet's one piece of it, right? The book comes with a website that has a whole bunch of other information on it. But we start there, and we start with the cells starting to absorb again. And that's when we improve quality, because we're giving the body what it needs. We're improving mitochondrial function. And we're taking a huge burden off the body. So then it can prioritize. And that's like the way I see it. And I think you see it the same way. It's the body saying, I just don't have the goods. Getting pregnant, staying pregnant is a huge challenge for the body. And the body, if it can't do it, it's basically saying to you, I just don't have it. I don't have what it takes right now. But you can get there. So I think that's the piece too of like, oh, once you're infertile, that's it. No, that's obviously not the case. And fertility can improve even as you're getting older. And even if your reserve is low, you can still improve what you have left.
So. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And Amy, what do you notice are the biggest diet mistakes that people are making at the moment?
They don't eat enough.
Yeah.
They could be eating super clean. They don't eat enough. I see food diaries all week long. Most women, when I'm paying attention, like when I'll sit and calculate their macros, they're getting, you know, ours are a little different than yours, but I recommend 80 to 100 grams of protein a day, right? For the average woman, you know, kind of obviously we adjust based on size. I think that's a good ballpark. Most women get 40 to 60 grams of protein.
Yep.
And then I recommend 6 to 8 servings of vegetables, 4 if on a good day, you know what I mean? And then, you know, if they are gluten-free, which I don't think everyone needs to be gluten-free. Like I want to really clearly say that I don't think everybody needs to be gluten-free. I don't think everybody needs to be dairy-free. I don't think everybody needs to be soy-free or corn-free or nightshade-free, but you need to cut it out to see how it responds like with your body or not. But say someone's like, well, I'm gluten-free and dairy-free, you know, and then you look at their diet and they're having like a gluten-free muffin for breakfast with like peanut butter and just, you know, it's loaded with sugar and all the things. And so a lot of that too, a lot of processed packaged you know, fake foods, even if they're healthy and clean. And I too, I love my Simple Mills almond flour crackers. And, you know, they do have five ingredients, and some would say that aren't the cleanest, but like there's space for that. However, you should, even beyond fertility, but women trying to conceive are extremely motivated. And I really understand that and have compassion for it, but you deserve to try something like this out to see what works for your body and what doesn't, because it can make a radical difference on the other side. But yeah, the number one thing I see is they just don't eat enough and they take long gaps between meals. I don't think the fasting data is supportive for women on fertility, but most women aren't fasting. They're just skipping meals. Like, it's very different. Yeah. You know, fasting means we're going to consume the same amount of calories in a shorter period of time. They're not doing that. They're literally going from 8 a.m. to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then from 1 to 7, you know, and that's not fasting, that's skipping. So I try to get them to kind of, you know, make sure they're hitting some protein points every 3 to 4 hours or something like that.
Yeah, great. And Amy, there's one thing that you talk about that I'm really fascinated with, and that is how emotions impact inflammation. Can you unpack that for me? Because obviously inflammation has got such a significant impact on fertility as well. But how does our emotional state impact that?
So I talk about this a lot in my book, Body Belief. I mean, I think I talked about it in all my books, but Body Belief is where I really went into it a little bit more and did a lot of the research on like placebo and nocebo and the neurochemical effects of our thoughts and belief systems. And, you know, you can find a lot of data to support the notion, to support the fact that there's definitely psychology information. Our beliefs dictate our behaviors dictate our health, right? So, so if you will, that kind of not so positive, maybe saboteur style thinking of this will never work out for me. I'm not good enough. I'm too old. This is wrong. X is wrong. Leads to then poor choices for our lifestyle and our diet and our mindset and our relationships, which will then lead to poor health outcomes. So that's pretty clear in the psychological data. And then from the neuroscientific perspective, there's also information showing that our thoughts actually create neurotransmitters in our brain. And then those neurotransmitters create physiological responses. So meaning like, you know, I'm not good enough or I'm too old. It's almost like becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The body then starts to say, oh, I'm too old. I'm going to start to shut down this thing here. But it's also like, I call it emotional inflammation more because this is probably more of my Chinese medicine training too, but just thoughts like that are so self-deprecating and just mean. And that meanness creates that kind of inflammation in the body that, you know, we call it like heat. Heat would be what we would say inflammation is in Chinese medicine. It's like toxin, you know, and it creates kind of that flurry of chaos. And so, yeah, I always am talking about like there's this physical inflammation and then there's this emotional inflammation. And if we're not addressing both, I'm not sure we can get to where we want to get, right? And again, not perfection. Perfection does not equal pregnancy. You're totally allowed to have negative thoughts. Anybody who tells you you can't have negative thoughts, you should, I think, immediately unfollow or unsubscribe. Yes. That's unrealistic. But can you say it softer? Can you be a little more kind? Can you meet yourself with compassion and understanding? And just kind of feel what that feels like soften things versus this intensity, which does seem to trigger an inflammatory response in the body.
Oh, yeah. And I think that just speaks to that there's no separation between mind and body, right? That, you know, it's just your body's keeping score of all of those things, and that's what's presenting with all of those symptoms. Absolutely. And it's such a good way to just describe it, that this is, you know, essentially the physical manifestation of the things that we're telling ourselves over and over again. And that can be really challenging for women as well, because, you know, this fertility journey can be so stressful. Amy, what do you wish every woman who is trying to conceive, what do you wish that they knew?
That they can do this. They can turn this around. That there's a lot more in their power than they're being told. And that age is not the biggest impediment, you know? I mean, I wish women didn't let those numbers define them, whether it's your age or your FSH or your AMH.
Excellent.
And I also wish that they knew they're in the driver's seat. You know, if your doctor isn't willing to do that test for you or isn't willing to change the protocol or isn't willing to refer you out, get a different doctor. And I know like everybody's medical systems are different and insurance in the US and like all these things. I understand that that's complicated and may cost you more. And I'm not saying that, you know, we need to be frivolous. I really respect your resources and your money, but you have every right or reason to get another opinion. You have every right and reason to question or to at least be a part of your protocol and the decisions that are being made on behalf of you growing your family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in Australia, what I notice is that there's such a huge gap between, you know, maybe it's a 35-year-old woman who has been trying to conceive for maybe 6 months. She might go to a GP. She'll have some tests done. The GP might say, you know, you're not ovulating, straight to a fertility clinic or something like that. Or the GP will say, I don't really know what's going on. We'll just send you to a fertility clinic. But there should be so many steps before that happens, before they rush straight into, you know, assisted reproductive technology where they're just painted with that unexplained infertility brush when, you know, they just haven't looked deep enough or they haven't addressed this person, this couple as a whole. And so now they're just starting them in, you know, usually it's IVF. ICSI here is the first thing that they're sort of put into because I don't think that they do enough investigation to sort of get to the bottom of what's actually happening for them. So they'll just, you know, lump them into that category. And then this poor woman without any information or opportunities to change things that are in her control is now going through risky procedures, the huge stress and emotional roller coaster that happens each month with it, every, you know, transfer and egg collection. And, you know, in Australia, it takes about six IVF cycles to achieve pregnancy, which doesn't mean that, you know, it's conception might have taken place, but no guarantee that it'll end in a live pregnancy. So I think that there's such a huge gap between, you know, maybe them trying for a period of time before they end up in a fertility clinic. And there's so many other steps along the way that could be, you know, given, they could be given better sort of, yeah.
Like, let's look at thyroid. Let's look at vitamin D levels. Let's look at low-lying infections. Let's look the immune system, right? Let's maybe, I'm becoming as an alternative practitioner, I think it's quite funny. I'm becoming such a proponent of the hysteroscopy. I'm such a pusher of the hysteroscopy because I'm like, who has looked inside your uterus? Who has checked it? Like, have we checked the uterine microbiome? Have we looked for fibroids? Have we looked for adeno? Have we looked for endo? And, you know, I also, the more I recommend it, the more I'm finding, oh my gosh, this could have been the problem all along. Yeah. You know, like, why are we not looking there first? And I listened to a podcast the other day, again, and I probably, you know, some of these people trigger me, but I like to hear the other side sometimes. And the doctor said about, they were talking about PGT testing and how actually highly inaccurate it is. And then something like, I heard a stat that just made me spin of something like, yeah, we're starting to see that only 1/3 of the tested normals are actually turning into live births, which I think we all kind of thought that. Now there's actual data. There's a huge piece of paper that research paper that came out. But then the doctor was saying, there was two doctors talking and the one was saying, well, how about we have the PGT normals and we've had like repeat implantation failure. So now we've wasted two embryos. Okay, now we should probably look at the uterine environment. And I'm like, why would you do that? Why would she work her, excuse my language, ass off to create these freaking embryos, she and he, if you're in a partnership, and you don't look at the uterine environment before you put it back in? No, that's unacceptable. the uterus plays a tremendous role. And I think the work we do in improving circulation and blood flow and like all the things like acupuncture, casserole packs, Maya massage, like all that is really awesome for the uterine environment. But if there is adenomyosis or if there is a uterine lining infection, like, I'm sorry, we have to treat it. And we cannot waste these embryos. These are precious, precious beings. And it's, I mean, obviously you can tell, but like to me too, the more I start to pay it, you know, the more you just see it clinically, you're like, I don't know. I don't understand why we're not being proactive with our testing versus reactive.
Yeah. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. And I mean, I absolutely share your frustration and passion there. Okay. So if you could give three tips to women who are trying to conceive, Amy, and I know it's so hard to boil it all down to say three tips, what would be your three favorite things or three top tips that you would give them?
Prioritize sleep.
Yep. Great.
You know, I think 7 to 8 hours of rest. Ideally, you're asleep before 11 o'clock. Again, perfection does not equal pregnancy. I think that would be number two. Perfection does not equal pregnancy. I think number three would be when it comes to diet and to supplements and to lifestyle and to mindset stuff and to even your testing, like, can we approach it from a place of discovery versus deprivation or, you know, being cornered or desperation, you know, like, can we say, I'm willing to, you know, remove these foods or try this lifestyle or this approach or this thing and see how I feel. So like coming back to the connection with you, how does this make me feel versus I have to do all these things because someone out there somewhere in the ether has told me that should help me get pregnant. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's really creating that sense of reconnection again, because that when I'm working with my clients, I think that's one of the biggest things I see is there's and it's trauma induced too. You know, I don't think we can ever underestimate the trauma that these women are going through and how horrible this situation is. But you never chose to be here, guys, you know, but it's like instead of disconnecting and kind of just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, could you reconnect and see how each different thing makes you feel.
I love that. So those things are get more sleep. So, so important. Perfection doesn't equal pregnancy. And the way that I've interpreted that last part is connect to your body. Really
hear your body speak and like try to discover, like be your own, you know, we don't all have to be scientists or nerds like you and I, you know, but just like, what is my body trying to tell me?
Yeah.
I love that. This is really about like getting that body back into that safe space, like recovery and it feeling again, like it has everything it needs to do its job to its fullest.
I mean, where can our, like, there's so much to this, and I would strongly recommend that everyone check out your book, especially the latest one, The Egg Quality Diet, because I do think eating for fertility and your nutrition around that, we sort of want to have that act as if principle, but there are some key things that you can really do to help to improve that. So I'd strongly suggest you check that out. But Amy, where can our audience find out more about you?
Yeah, I think my website kind of has everything, amyrupp.com. And then I'm the most active on Instagram. So if you are on social media, that's where I'm most active. And then second to that, active on TikTok.
Ah, great. Okay. And we will post the links to all of that in the show notes today. But Amy, thank you so much for joining us on Wellness Women Radio. I don't know if it's reassuring or not to know that things are pretty much the same in the US as what they are here in Australia and other parts of the world that we sort of consult with patients. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but you know, our frustrations are certainly the same, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope that, you know, our voices just continue to travel and, you know, the patients continue to advocate for themselves. I mean, that's really what our mission is, right? Is to educate and empower. So you guys can go and get the support that you need and deserve. And I really think that's a huge piece of it is not taking no for an answer and being an educated consumer.
Yeah, that is perfect. And that's sort of the purpose of this as well, so that we're empowering you to do that. So ladies, you've been listening to Wellness Women Radio. We are the Wellness Women, Dr. Andrea Huddleston and Dr. Ashley Bond. We are raising the bar for women's health. And until next week, be well.
This has been a production of thewellnesscouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on facebook.com/thewellnesscouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.